Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow, and they call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. And coming to you live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hello, world. Everything's fine. Boy, you know, I was out a little bit yesterday, and it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. I realize it's like 3 weeks away. So, man, the calendar is closing on 2020, man. That would be nice to move on from this year. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely, to keep moving on. But before we keep moving on, we still want to give our condolences to our boxing historian, Henry Hascop. Our prayers are with you through this time and process of the loss of your son, Henry Hascop Jr. We're praying for you that God guides you and strengthen you and your family and your friends through this hard time, and especially through the hard times of these holidays such as Christmas and New Year's, where family and friends get together. At this time, it's limited, but due to the circumstances of the death of your son, Henry, to you and Joyce, man, we just ask you, we're going to keep praying for you and let him guide you and show you the way through this process. Yeah, Bob.
Right. Amen to that. That's absolutely right. Yeah. Hearts go out to the whole family, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, look, we're going to move right in to move around the world, and then we'll come back and talk about last week's fiasco, a glorified spar match with Mike Tyson and the boys. And hey, some interesting things happened on that card exhibition with some fights on it. But go on, Bob, take us around the world with it before we bring
We just want a quick mention, too. Last night there was a big fight over there in England, too, and Billy Joe Saunders, he remained undefeated. He's now 30-0. He had a unanimous decision over Martin Murray, and he retains his WBO World Super Middleweight crown. And we can talk about that a little bit later, too, but just wanted to put that off at the top here. But we start today at the Fox pay-per-view event in Arlington, Texas. That's where it ended up in the USA here. Errol Spence Jr. returning to the ring after that horrific accident earlier in the year. He's 26-0, 21 knockouts, and he'll defend his WBC and IBF World Welterweight titles against the challenger Danny Garcia. He's out of Philly. He's 36-2 with 21 KOs. And the undercard is topped with the Eduardo Ramirez, 27-2-3, 10 knockouts, and Miguel Flores, who's 24-3 with 12 KOs. It's a featherweight eliminator. And the Sebastian Fondora, 15-0-1, 10 KOs versus Habib Ahmed, 27-1-1, 18 KOs. It's a super welterweight 12-rounders. And also featured is Josecito Lopez, 37-8, and Francisco Santana, 25-8-1, welterweight clash. And another 10-rounder, we'll also see Isaac Avalar, 16-2, 10 KOs, stepping in with Zachariah Lucas, undefeated at 23-0, 16 KOs. It's a super featherweight showdown. Elsewhere in the States, in Louisville, Kentucky, flyweight Salito Henderson, 7-1, is showcased on a bill that will have 10-0 Deontay Brown fighting Darrell Giles Jr., who's 9-5-2 for the vacant ABF USA and Mid-American lightweight belt. And Abel Aparicio, undefeated at 6-0, squaring off with Julio Garcia for the open ABF USA Mid-American Super Bantamweight strap. San Juan, Puerto Rico returns to action, highlighting the Danielito Zabrilla, 13-0 versus Rodolfo Puente, 19-4-2, super lightweight attraction. Heavyweights Miguel Puente and Rogelio Morales face off in the main event in Tamaulipas, Mexico. Trinidad, Bolivia tops their card with the female flyweights Mariela Rivera Valverde and Sofia Wells doing battle. Tyc Sports TV will be in La Calera, Cordoba, Argentina for a fight for the interim WBA World Female Super Bantamweight crown between Nazarena Romero, 10-0, and Julieta Andreas Inez Cardozo, 12-5. Overseas now to Westminster, London, England, on BT Sport TV for Leighton Arthur, 17-0, 12 KOs versus Anthony Yarde, 20-1, 19 knockouts. They clashed for the Commonwealth British Empire light heavyweight title. And it's good to see Anthony Yarde get back into the ring. Of course, we know he had lost two family members to this horrible coronavirus, so it'll be good to see him back out in the ring tonight. Michael Rabaretta and Chris Bork also vie for the vacant WBC International Super Bantam belt. And over on the continent, in vie of Belgium, Nico Kachatrian, who's 10-0, and Joseph Arreyes, 8-12-1, vie for the open Belgian lightweight strap. Antoine Vanneker, 14-1, and Brian Mayrena, 10-18-1, both seek the country's open super lightweight title. And former WBA world champion Fonke Hermans, 10-3, takes on Luisa Davidova, 3-1, for the vacant EBU European female super middleweight crown. Gilles in Denmark hosts a contest for the country's open welterweight belt between Oliver Mullenberg, 6-0-1, and Frank Madsen, undefeated at 5-0. Big card in Lavoie-Paradette, Hote, San Franz, with Massi Tachauer, 14-4, taking on Giuseppe Carafia, 12-3-2, for the vacant EBU European Union super lightweight crown in the 12-round main event. Also on the bill is the Olivier Vautrin, 16-3-1, versus Abdoulaye Dion, 14-1-1 clash for the country's open cruiserweight strap. And Kevin Velasajo, 14-0, faces Ronnie Landoleta, 17-2, for the WBA International Super Middleweight title. Bacordio in Lombardia, Italy, they feature the contest for the country's bantamweight belt between 2-0 Vincenzo Picardi and the 6-1 Gianluca Conselmo. Super middleweights Andres Weber and Adnan Zilic compete in the headliner in Königsberg, Germany. Warsaw, Poland hosts co-main event 10-rounders as Michael Szyslak, 19-1, 13 knockouts, meets up with Taylor Mabika, 19-6-2, 10 KOs in a cruiserweight contest. And Przemyslaw Miłowski, 18-1, crosses the ropes with Michael Surowiecka, 22-4. The card also highlights former WBC World Female Super Welterweight title holder Ewa Piekarska. He's 14-1, slugging it out with the debuting Rosa Gimena. It's Ruslan Kamalov, 8-0-1, versus Nikita Kuznetsov, 11-1-2, in the Super Feather finale in Ekaterinburg, Russia. Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, showcases Nicholas Mungangi, 6-3-1, versus Sheikh Saeed, 2-2, in the Super Lightweight closer. New venues in Auckland, New Zealand, first at the Waitemata Rugby League undefeated cruiserweights going at it, as Jesse Mayo, 2-0, tukes it out with the 11-0 Craig Thompson. And at the Event Finder Stadium, the topper is the Shiva Mishra versus Almstanda Super Lightweight Showdown. Cessnock in New South Wales, Australia, will see Troy O'Malley, 11-0, step in with Wade Ryan, who's 16-9, for the vacant IBO International and Australian Super Welterweight titles. While up in Slash Creek in Queensland, cruiserweight Daniel Valusaga and Robert Ferguson do battle. Up now to Bang Fun Tyler, where it's Apachet Pichmani, 7-0, versus the 7-2 Musheg Adelarm for the WBC Asia Boxing Council lightweight belt. And a 10-1 Fighters Arm Payakam fights Suryan Satwan, 60-10, 41 KOs, and they fight for the WBC ABC Super Flyweight title. 17-3 welterweight Yuri Nagano tangles with Masufimi Ando, 6-10-2, in the welterweight finale in Tokyo, Japan. Hey, Aaron, we got up to 18 countries, man. You know, we've seen a lot of these countries getting back in Europe, trying to make it work, getting some of their countries, the national belts taken care of, so they're keeping it local. But 18 countries, we haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah, a long time. It looks like things are coming back strong. You know, with tonight's fight down there in Texas with Garcia and Spence, you know, and then it's a pay-per-view event. I don't know how much the avid dedicated boxing fan is going to fuel that much money into their pocket, but we got to wait and see, Bob, what that event tonight does and how it comes out. But to analyze the bout, you know, Garcia is going to have to make it a real fight. He's going to have to put Spence in a real fight, and don't let it become a boxing match with Spence. Can turn it into a boxing match, and don't let it get it into a fight. then he will come out the victor, and that's good. I'm looking to see a dynamite fight.
Right, right. I think so, too. And, you know, it's a big thing, too, Spencer. We've talked about it over the last several months, the horrible car accident he was in. He was lucky to live, and he knows that, too. And I think we might just see a different Errol Spence Jr. in the ring tonight, too, somebody really more dedicated maybe than we've ever seen. But I think, he's out to prove himself. How many people view this, I don't know. A lot of people might have spent their money last week on that exhibition match.
You know, from Spence being ejected from the car like he did and recovering from that's why Garcia has to go in and make it a fight, bang him up, you know, get him hurt, bang, hit them spots where he was hurt, where he got ejected from the car, and, you know, and make them old injuries come back on him and see what happens, see if he can – overcome the pain from the car accident and what Garcia will be putting on his butt if he goes out and make it a real fight, you know, a downright slug out, bang out. Oh, great Texans. You know how they do it down in Texas. Gunslinging, baby, gunslinging, Bob. If he can make it a gunslinging match like that instead of, oh, fire and go run and hide and all that fire, go run and hide. To come out with a decision, you know, instead of going for, hey man, somebody got to get knocked out in this fight, and it's sure
right,
going to be,
right,
you
yeah.
know. So if he can turn it into that kind of fight, it's going to be great for the people that do pay and watch it. But you know, for them to keep digging in the pockets like that, and this is $75 after the Tyson pay per view, and we have our guest holding on the queue, and we'll get right with you. We have our guest holding the cue, Bob. So if he can do this, if he can go in there and make it a fight, Garcia, he stands a chance to win the fight. Bring back the mold injuries from that car accident when he was ejected. And the Spence could stick and move and make it a boxing match and come down and make a decision. But, you know, like I say, old Texas style, it's gunslinging, somebody's getting knocked out. but Bob, last week fiasco with Tyson and Roy Jones, it lived up to the bill. You know, you see two great champions in the ring, and both of them displayed that. But like I said, you did see the loss. You did see the cha-cha-cha. And then you also seen Roy Jones, what he had to do to keep Mike Tyson off of him was a hold. And he did what he had to do to make it through. And we also had Snoop Dogg, who was the ring announcement. You know, he was puffing on so much weed, he found Jesus in the Paul fight. So, and that's a good thing, because now he's going around saying, Jesus, 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 he smoked so much weed, Bob, he found Jesus. Ain't that amazing in a Tyson fight? So, you know, all of these things. Snoop found Jesus so much, he loves him so much, now he wants to start a boxing club, Bob. So, isn't that something? But to see a guy, you know, at Mike Tyson's age and Roy Jones' age, it shows how great these two and competitors as fighters that they can come and even put on a show like they did at that stage of the game. They're way ahead of your time, but we had said before that, you know, Jack Johnson did it with Joe Burnett to raise war bonds up in New York. Back in the 1945, something like that. And it wasn't that kind of thing like Roy Jones and Mike Tyson, but it was something to see two men's, one in the 60s and one in the 70s with Jack Johnson and Joe Burnett put on that exhibition after fighting nine times for real and then come back at that late to the game to put on an exhibition for war bonds. And what we're saying, you know, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones were saying this is for charity. And what I think what they should do, and here's where their success is going to be. you know, everybody that we had on our show, Bob, managers, promoters, fighters, and all that, they all talk about a pension fund. Tyson and Roy Jones put in their head and say, all right, I'm going to set up an endowment pension fund for retired fighters like them. And, you know, this fight is done well over $1 million. They're going to give most of that to the IRS. Take that what's liable to the IRS. Start this Legends Retirement Fund with that money and let it mature. And then they can start helping boxers and fighters when they get to this stage of the game in order to keep going. You know, through the struggle of making money, retirement funds where a lot of them couldn't save and retire, where they can have a retirement fund that they can help start a retirement fund for all of these people of the game of boxing. And I think that's where their charity should go. And if they do that, it's going to be long lasting in this game. And their two names will be implanted in that for a long, long time. You know what I mean, Bob? I think that's something. You know?
That's a good idea. Absolutely. That'd be good to see. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the boxers are ready to go back in the ring, you know. But yeah, you get guys like that coming in and help out fellow fighters. Absolutely. It'd be a great thing.
Yeah, it would. And with the Paul and fight where Snoop Dogg seen Jesus and called him out. You know, with the basketball player Robertson being stretched out on the thing. That's what happens, man, when you see something that is crucial or you see something crucial, you're going to have to call on Jesus, Allah, and the other people too, you know, when that happens. And I'm glad that Robinson is coming around, you know.
Right.
Basketball players and fighters don't mix. You know, they may want to fight, but you have to hone your skills, and you have to get in that gym and practicing hitting and not getting hitting, conditioning, and all of these types of things, a war of nutrition that makes a fighter one of the special athletes in the sports field. You know, you have to have endurance. You got to have speed. You got to have conditioning. You got to have split milliseconds timing from hitting and not getting hitting. And how to make the moves right and learn ring generalship in the ring and all of that kind of thing. There's a lot go in the fight, and it just ain't going in there, bang, 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 and you know what I mean, and take it to the scorecard. So these things are what's needed in the game, Bob, to make sure that these athletes are well and prepared. And guys be in great shape and all that and get hit and get knocked out, and it's still scary. But that's the risk you take in climbing in the ring, Bob.
Right. And Jake Paul looked good. Actually, he was hurting him. Every time he hit him, he was hitting him hard. And Robinson never felt that before underneath the basket or something. Like that, a little elbow. And, you know, Paul came at him, man. He did.
Yeah, he did. And in the same way with Mike Tyson, I think Mike Tyson's on to something. Mauricio Suleiman, before he even had this fight, said that Mike Tyson is deserving a heavyweight championship, win, lose, or draw, that he would give him one. I think Mauricio Suleiman's right. Give him a shot. Tyson Fury or him or Anthony Joshua, it's going to be millions and millions of dollars once put together and all the details worked out with a Tyson Fury. With Tyson versus Tyson, we know a Tyson going to win. And with Anthony Joshua, you know, with Mike Tyson, it becomes a great fight too. So, hey, look, let's see what happens, what comes to it.
Right. And, you know, just a quick note too, speaking of Joshua, next week takes on Pulev, you know, we'll be talking about that. They're going to allow her 1,000 fans into the venue there too over in England. So they're trying to get some fans in the stands. But, yeah, we'll be talking more about that next week. But Anthony Joshua back in action.
Yeah, Anthony Joshua back in action. He said he's ready. He's ready to go. He's biting at the bit. You know, he can't do what happened in New York City when he was supposed to fight John Lewis and he got clocked in a fill-in bout, not being ready, not being prepared. On this stage of the game, you can't underestimate nobody. And Mike Tyson knows that. He's a prime example of that, of underestimating somebody and not wanting to do what it takes to be great. Greatness is not happened by accident. It happens by pure preparation, so you don't have to have a piss-poor performance. And when you prepare, when you fail to prepare, you prepare for failure. And Anthony Joshua can't let that happen. There's a lot of great fights, a lot of great things on the horizon for him. He just has to live up to the bill and be ready for anything, because anything can happen when you're in a boxing match, Bob.
Right.
Yeah, well, Bob, our guests are holding on the queue. So
okay.
let's bring our guests in here. When we're talking about all of these great fighters, this person that I'm getting ready to bring on to the show, when you talk to names like Muhammad Ali, Larry Holmes, Roy Jones, Mike Tyson, you know, Manny Pacquiao, and the list goes on and on. The list is long, fine, but distinguished. And when you mention this man, he is, and he fills the void, and he is worthy of praise, and he can pull the electricity out of the air, make something, and put it together to make something electrifying. No other than a legendary boxing promoter, Murad Muhammad. Welcome into the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Murad.
Hello?
Murad?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, I can't hear him. Murad, we got a nine. Hold on. Let's see. Murad? Hold on. It's other people. Murad? Hello? Welcome into the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Murad. Is he there? Hello?
Hello.
We got some technical. Yeah, someone's on the line. 973-803-8175. Is this Murad?
No, this is Murad's assistant. I'm going to try and reach him right now.
All right.
Let him know that you can't hear him. Hold on, brother.
Waiting to get him. Okay.
Yeah, they're waiting to get him. Well, Bob, while he's trying to get him, let's see, you know,
we've got a couple other pieces. Yeah, you know, news we could pass along. Speaking of heavyweights, I want to mention too, Jerome Miller finally got his actual suspension from the Nevada Boxing Commission. It's a 24-month suspension. It's retroactive, but he's basically going to be out all next year. Also, just want to mention, too, Clarissa Shields. She signed an MMA deal this week with the Professional Fighters League. So she wants to join up, and she wants to become a two-sport champion, not just win divisions. She wants to win titles in MMA and in boxing. So we look to see what happens there. And, you know, speaking of Mike Tyson and the Jones fight, Holyfield, you know, he said, let's go, let's bring it on. He wants to fight Mike Tyson, and basically Tyson even said. Okay,
yeah, well, it looks like Holyfield, you know, they tried to get Holyfield, but he wanted too much money. So he basically priced himself out of the deal, Bob. It all sounds good. You know, if you want to fight, you got to make things that you don't put yourself out of the ballpark. You always got to put yourself in the ballpark so you can hit a home run, a grand slam, whatever. Holyfield just put himself way out of the ballpark, and they couldn't bring it together. So he's out there crying. He knows why. It's M-O-N-E-Y. Bring it into the ballpark so you can make things happen. Yeah, Murad's assistant. Is Murad on?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Murad?
Yes.
Hello? Murad. Yeah, all these numbers keep calling him. Yeah, Murad?
No, this is not Murad.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Murad?
No, this is not Murad. This is Newark Boxing Program Coordinator, Nasir Graham.
Yeah, I'm looking for Murad. Hold on. Hello, Murad Muhammad.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello.
I'm looking for Murad.
understand.
Marad's calling in. I don't know how y'all got the number, but I'm waiting on
this is Warren Flagg, a retired FBI agent. Marad asked me to dial in. So I'm listening to the show.
Okay.
You got any questions? I'm the one that arrested Don King twice.
Well, that's good. Him and Marad, Don King and Marad were partners, so that's a good thing. Marad Muhammad?
Yes.
Yeah.
The greatest
welcome into the World Boxing Review, Marad.
Said that again?
Yes. Welcome into the show, Marad, the World Boxing Review Radio Show. How you doing?
I'm very honored that you called me, and I'm really honored to know that the flag man is on the line. I want to thank him because usually when you reach the heights that he has reached in this government, you just don't come on any radio station. But he's one great hell of a human being that I've met. So I'm glad to be here. I sent messages out to over 1,000 people to come on your radio show, and I thought it was an honor to do so because of your outstanding work of being with Mike Tyson for his last 7 to 8 fights as a corner man. You're probably one of the youngest ever been with a heavyweight champion of his caliber, and so I want to thank you for inviting me.
Well, absolutely, Marad. You know, it's a deep pleasure. You know, I know you since I was a young man, and the great opportunities that you gave fighters that I was working with, such as Tim Witherspoon. But I'm going to mention, you know, some things like Triangle Productions, Baha Muhammad, Ben Muhammad. Those talk about those earlier years, Muhammad Ali, you know, because I want to give you something in bulk so you can go, because you are a promoter and you can do it second to none. So I just want to lay that long list out, you know, Triangle Productions, Ben Muhammad, Baha Muhammad, Muhammad Ali, and all of that. Come on with it, Marad.
Well, first of all, we started off. It was five of us. They used to call us the five brothers. We used to move as one everywhere we went. And surely we was with Herbert Muhammad, who was known as Jabba Muhammad, the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the brother of Imam Wallace Dean Muhammad. Nevertheless, that was cornerstone. And our apartment, office was across the street by a jewelry store, Rahman. And we hired a young lady named Fitrat Muhammad, and she would run across the street because of the two phone booths and say, yes, Cornerstone Production. And they would say, can I speak to Marad? So hold on, I'll click you in. And she would put a phone over there and holler, Marad, phone. And I'd run across the street, Marad Muhammad, and I'd do my business. She did that for all five of us, Baha. It was Bilal, it was Akbar, it was Abdullah, and myself. And Abdullah was the president at the time. And Akbar and I, you know, we made a lot of money as a young man at that time. He was a great salesman. And Baha was like my brother. Whatever I did, I called Baha to be with me. When I went into the restaurant business, I brought Baha with me. When I went into doing boxing, Baha got real close to Herbert Muhammad and very close to Muhammad Ali. He was the first one to really be with Muhammad Ali. We learned through Herbert, you only could talk, only one person can talk at a time, but he didn't want anyone else to talk. So we just let Baha talk to Herbert. And we would write down what we want him to say. And Herbert used to say, you only got 5 minutes. 5 minutes. He would literally count those minutes. Okay, that's it. Thank you. And we learned talking to him many times because you couldn't reach him. So we'd all be up at the camp, and we at the camp, and here come a guy in with a lot of mouth, and he has hair sticking up, and he had a big
pocketbook on his arm, and we thought something was wrong. You know, was he AC Ducey? And we were sitting there, and he told Ali he had Ernie Chavis and Slim, I can't think of his name, come to me, but two fighters and two punches, two outstanding punches. And he wanted to fight Muhammad Ali, but he was talking so much that Ali said, you need to talk to my manager, Herbert Muhammad. So he gave him the number and he came back. He said, I've been calling this man for 3 days. He said, well, you better keep calling him because he don't call nobody back. You got to catch him. So he finally caught him and Herbert came in. I was sitting in the meeting and he wanted Candy Slim. He wanted Candy Slim. Both of them was great punches.
Jeff Merritt.
Jeff Smith. You
Jeff
got
Smith.
It, young man. Jeff Smith.
And Jeff
Ernie Chavis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Herbert said, well, you speak very well. He said, why don't you try to be a boxing promoter and put those licenses down as a manager? And he said, well, they're not going to give me license. You know, I'm a felon. He said, we'll get your license for you. So Herbert threatened Madison Square Garden, said, we'll go out the country if you don't give him any license. The man did his time. He was pardoned. If you don't give him no license, we won't fight in Madison Square Garden. So after we're sitting on the 67th floor of the Rockefeller Center, and Don King said, come with me, Murat. I don't know why he chose me. We got in this limo with foam in the car, and was kind of new to me, and we got there, and they hand them Madison Square Garden, hand them his license on a silver platter, and said, tell Herbert that he's got to come back here to Madison Square Garden, and we did. We came back and forth, Zorro Foley, but the point was that that's how Don King got his license. And so we going on, and I came up with the idea to do the martial art with Kareem Abdullah against Jeff Smith. And because I was a martial artist and I felt I'll go into the martial art business. So I said, Herbert, I need you to get Don King to put this on the card. He did. It was the main event was Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier. The semi event was Jeff Smith and Kareem Abdullah, martial art. And the undercard was Rodney Bobick and Larry Holmes. That's a true story. Never been done in the history of the boxing business that a martial art was underneath as a semi-event. And we was in Lanham, Maryland. And we did the fight. And of course, Kareem lost. And he only lost because he was a little hard-headed. We told him that you cannot train on a wooden floor and then get in the ring and fight a guy that's used to the ring. So Kareem got tired, but he
didn't
fight. That's how he really lost the fight. Nevertheless, when we was counting our money, we put up about $60,000 to do it in Lanham, Maryland. And we got back our money, and we might have made about $50,000. And Don was counting millions. I said, I'm in the wrong business. And this is how I I'm going to the boxing business, man. So all went away. They all went away. And when they went away, I was by myself. Don't ever leave me idle by myself. So I said to my assistant, can you find the boxing commissioner? And she said, sure. He's on the phone. I said, what's his name? Bob Lee. As I'm dealing with a guy from China or some part of Asia. And you couldn't tell because he spoke so distinctly. You didn't know was he white or black. And he said this to me. He said, you know how many people try to get their license but won't follow suit? Well, you got the wrong man. I come from the Muhammad Ali's era. Ali does everything on time, and he doesn't hesitate or delay. So just tell me what to do, Mr. Lee, and I will do it. He said, okay, I'm going to send you to my assistant. And he was over top of consumer affairs. He was holding the fort down as a boxing commissioner, but he was never a boxing commissioner. He was just the governor gave him those two positions. He made his money with being over top of consumer affairs. And I walked down and went into the building and and seen the young lady who told me to see. Her name was Marion Wilkinson. So I said, excuse me, I was sent here by Bob Lee. Oh, yes, he told me he was coming. He said, now, if you do what I ask you to do, he's going to help you get your license. I said, well, you've got to fill this application out properly. So I said, good. You know how to do it? She said, yeah, I'm giving it to you. Good, you do it. So I know it'll be properly, and I'll sign it. So she did. So, okay, we had a pretty good conversation. And then when I finally got my license, they said I had to go to Trenton to see Althea Gibson because they had just made the great tennis player. The great tennis player. Right. She was the commissioner. So I said, well, why don't you come? So she said, okay, I'll go with you. So she went with me, and we got along real well. And so she handed me my license. So I said, Mary, I'll tell you what, quit, and I'm going to make you rich. She said, oh, you out your mind. You know what they pay me? I said, we'll make a great deal of money if you resign and come with me. You know that woman resigned? And we resigned.
Yeah.
On the first fight at school stadium when we put the fight on. Oh, my God. The first fight, the school staying, everything going good. Out there, just in there, and here come a guy named Lou Duva. I said, who are you? He said, I'm Lou Duva. I said, well, what do you do? He said, well, I do amateurs. I said, yes. He said, are you ready for the fight? Yes. He said, do you have extra gloves? I said, well, it's six bouts. I got six gloves, 12 pair of gloves. He said, no, you got to have extra gloves. And you don't have extra gloves? Because gloves can get cut. I said, no, I don't have extra gloves. He said, I got a pair for you. He said, do you have the laces? I said, they come with laces. You got to cut some laces to take the gloves off. I said, I don't have laces. He said, I'll give you laces. He said, let me ask you a question. Do you have stools? I said, what the hell I need stools? He said, you need stools for the fighters to sit down on. I said, I don't have stools. I got stools for you. He said, well, what about gravel? I said, what the hell is gravel? Sound like you want to grab something. No. That's the stuff you put in the ring so they don't slip. Their
don't
shoes
slip.
Are brand new. I said, I don't have that. He said, you do. Last but not least, do you have a bell? What bell? He said, you got to have a bell so the fight can go. And you got to have a timekeeper. I said, I don't have any of that. He said, don't worry. I got your timekeeper, and I got your belt. I said, you know what? I'm going to call you Wally. He said, what is that? I said, friend. And we've been friends all the way to his death. So I'm standing there. Here come up there against it. She said, well, son, I don't believe you're going to do this fight. I said, why? It's a hurricane coming. I said, let's do the fight now and beat the hurricane. She said, no, I don't think you're going to beat the hurricane. And here come that hurricane. We had to get out of there. So I said, well, I'm going to be like Ali. I ain't quitting. So the next day, Tony Marenghi wrote the story in the Star Ledger and said, Murad Muhammad was not saved by the bell. What bell? Hurricane bell came from New Jersey.
Mariah, because we're going to cover it a little bit of board territory, you know, because you did so many great things in promotion. So we could, you know, speed it up because you go on and on because you're a great promoter. But let's talk about the things you did inside the penitentiary system, fights you did with James Scott and stuff like that. Explain, you know, talk a little bit about that so they know, you know, that kind of work you did in your promotions too.
Well, what happened, my brother, after doing that fight was successful. We had 7,000 people showed up, and it was the greatest success I ever had. And we drew over $100,000, a lot of money back then. So I decided that I wanted to do something different, and I watched a movie called The Network. And The Network, I love movies. They give me different ideas. And The Network is about Walter Cronkite. And Walter Cronkite says, stick your head out the window. I can't take it. We're not taking it anymore. Hell no, we're not taking it anymore. And
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not taking it anymore. There you go.
There you go. I'm mad as hell. I'm not taking it
anymore. I love that movie.
So I fell in love with that movie. And so what happened at the end, they wanted to kill him. And the reason they wanted to kill him is because he told everybody, don't listen to him anymore. He saw Jesus, and he didn't want to do it anymore. So what happened is they got the two Caucasians with bags full of money in a suitcase, went down to the Black Panther Party. I said, what the hell are they going to do with this? And my God, on the front row, when the curtains went up, these three black men with all black on jumped up and shot him down. I was very, very, I didn't understand how could that happen and why could that happen. But in the back, this is what got me. In the back, they was jumping up down. Ratings, ratings, we got ratings. I said, there it is. I need to get into the network. Ratings. I went to the governor, and I said, Mr. Governor, you know they're burning down Rahway State Prison. He said, yes. I said, I can help you. He said, you can help me. Yes. What are you going to do? I said, I'm going to give them a trade. I'm going to handcuff all the tough guys without putting real handcuffs on them. He said, but what are you? I said, I'm going to teach them boxing. He said, you're going to teach them boxing? I said, yes. And he said, well, what do you want? I said, I want exclusivity. He said, exclusivity? What are you going to do? I said, I'm going to bring them food. I'm going to bring them their clothing. I'm going to bring everything that they need. I'm going to help take their children off of welfare. There's a victim program. I'm going to put money in the victim program. I'm going to pay the corrections officers double time and a half. And I'm going to bring millions of dollars worth of taxes to this state. He said, okay, I'll give you exclusive. I want it exclusively of all the institutions for rehabilitation. He said, now, either you crazy or you got something. He signed it. The attorney general signed it. Barbara was over top of all the institutions signed it. And I walked out. Elijah came over to me and said, where are you going to get the money? I said, I don't know, but God is great. So I had a theme called, Would You Pay to Go to Jail? They came from all over, go to jail. They were paying me to get into the prison to see a fight. But now I can't make no money with 500 seats. So I said, I got to get in the network. So I went and seen a group of Jews named Bill Caton and Jim Jacobs. I walked in.
Right.
I said, listen, I said, how y'all like to make more money? You're a promoter. Yeah, we don't do no promoting. I know. What do you do? He said, we rent our films to the network. I said, yes, but you know every boss in there, don't you? He said, yes, I give you 20% off the top. Off the top? What do you want to do? I said, just walk me through the door. You know what James Brown said? Open the door and I'll get it. So he said, okay, sign this. I signed it. Week later, he said, meet me at Time Warner's. I didn't know where the hell Time Warner's was. I called him back to get him. Oh, can you send me something to tell me how to get to Time Warner's? So he told me how to get to Time Warner's. I walked in, he was standing there. He said, okay, we're going up to see the president. I said, whoa, this is big. Went upstairs, seen the president, and meet a guy named Seth Abraham. And he said, well, Murad, you know, you're two great gentlemen here, but we don't do live boxes. I said, you know, I said, if I was doing live boxing, then you kick me out. He said, well, what are you here for? I'm going to bring you ratings. He said, how are you going to do that? I said, I'm going to get you behind a maximum security wall. Where? Broadway, where they burned the prison down, where the warden was sodomized, where people losing their life. You going to get our cameras behind there? I said, yeah, deal.
And I introduced live boxing to Time Warner. But we went in there, and I got James Brown to sing the national anthem. And he told me, I don't know the words. I said, I'll give them to you. Oh, say, can you see? Oh, say, can you see? I'm giving him all the words from the song. And the fight, the reason why the fight happened, Eddie the Gregory Flay, great fighter. I had to get the number one.
Eddie was
the number one. I said, I'm coming to get the number one because there ain't no way in the world this is going to be a great fight on TV unless Scott, who ain't fought in 4 years, is going to be able to fight against the number one contender. So the manager, his name was Joe something, Joe with all white hair, tall gentleman. He said, are you out your mind? We're getting ready to fight Victor Gutierrez. I said, how much you getting paid to fight Victor Gutierrez? He said, we're getting $45,000. I said, well, when are you going to fight? He said, in 3 months. I said, if you fight James Scott in 1 month, I'm going to pay you the same amount of money, and you just double it. Go beat up Scott. He ain't fought in 4 years. And then you go out there and fight Victor Gutierrez. He said, deal. Deal, he come in there, prison man, and the prisoner is screaming and hollering, calling Eddie all kinds of homos and such and such, trying to scare Eddie. Eddie was scared. The fight is on. Man, it was a war. And Scott beat Eddie. Beat him severely, but Eddie would not quit. He would not. I made it a 12 round. I call it elimination because he was getting ready to fight for the title. And HBO won best program of the year, and I was winning for 27 years.
Isn't that something? But you did take Eddie Mustafa when he beat Marvin Johnson. Now, not
what
in
happened?
Tennessee, bro. And when
yeah,
you stood up,
happened?
You stood up.
I came to Russell Peltz's fight, and I was at the door, and Russell told Eddie he couldn't come in. I said, are you out your damn mind? This is the number one contender. He said, no, he's not. They dropped him. I said, but he's a fighter. He said, no. I said, you got my seat? Yeah, give it to Eddie. All right, I'll find him a seat. So when I came out, Eddie walked over to me with his best friend and asked me would I take him over. I said, I don't chase the pretty woman. If the woman come to me, I know I got her. But I don't chase her. You came to me, I'm morally obligated, you blew a title fight, but you got to do what I say. He said, what do you want me to do? Get the hell out of Brooklyn. Come over here in New Jersey and let me build you back to the number one shot. So we did. We was back. But when the fight came, Bob Arum, because Bob and Johnson, we the number one mandatory, I come to Bob, and Bob said, okay, we're going to give Eddie $125,000 for the first fight, $150,000 for the second fight, $175,000 for the third fight, and $250,000 for the last fight. I said, are you finished? He said, yes. I said, okay. I said, Eddie, I'm going to give you $125,000, $150,000. You're going to get $175,000 and $250,000. I said, sounds good, don't it? He said, yes, but who's promoting it? I said, Bob Arum. I'm not leaving you. I said, what do you mean you ain't leaving me, man? I'm getting $50,000 each fight. He said, if you ain't promoting, I'm not fighting. I said, you kidding? So I went back to Bob Arum and I said, well, Eddie pretty much said, go to hell. He said, that
right.
Yellow belly, no good, spineless guy. And he threw an ashtray over my head. But I knew it was going to happen because Herbert told me he's an emotional guy. When nothing goes his way, he's going to break up all the toys. So I
right.
I'm a martial artist. So I thrust my finger close to his eyes. I said, are you God? Are you God? He sat down. He said, no, I'm not God. Don't you ever tell me what we can't do. He said, all right, I'll do the fight. I'm giving you $25,000. You're going to just give me $25,000. So I called for the president, Mendoza. I said, Rod, you're the mandatory. You have to take the fight. Can't teach you how to negotiate. Never told me about pay. You can go to a price bid. I didn't know nothing
right.
about price. That goes back to
first
Eddie.
Bid, yeah.
Eddie, take the fight, man. You just made $500,000. That young man said, I've been with you. I'm here. I'm not going nowhere. We'll fight for $25,000. I gave
That's
him the fight for $25,000 and went to Muhammad Ali and said, this man deserved to train in your camp. He said, you got it. I took him to the Muhammad Ali's camp, and he was training, and he was doing pretty good, and we got a guy in named Slim Robinson. Brought Slim in, and Slim come in the door trying to show him how to fight because of why he didn't fight Scott the proper way. So now he's teaching him, he's teaching him, he's teaching him. So I get a call that said, hey, man, the guy don't even want to go run. So maybe he don't want to run. He said, you got to come up here. So I said, hold it. I'll take care of this. I called my sensei, Kareem Abdullah. I said, Kareem, I need you up. He said, I don't train no boxers. I said, yeah, but you can get him in shape. Because I said, he's up here scaring everybody with his pistol. With his pistol, yeah, he tells them, don't come in my room. I'm not running, and you better get out or I'm going to shoot you. So everybody's scared when I'm up the camp. So, you know, Kareem's crazy as hell. So Kareem comes, and Kareem's training. So now Eddie is running because he don't care. He said, you're going to shoot me or you're going to be the world champ. Which one you want to be? So so Eddie started listening to him, and he's running. I get a call and said, Eddie will not run the mountain. I said, what are you talking about? You know, Ali's hill, he gets halfway and quit. I said, well, I'll be there because me and Eddie, I can get Eddie to do anything. He had love for me. So he said, no, I got it. I got it. 3 days later, he said, he made it. I said, how did he make it? He said, I said, on top of the mountain is freedom. Freedom roll! Freedom roll! He made it.
Yeah,
said,
that's
whoa,
that.
It's good. So we flew into Indianapolis. I was scared that they're going to put something in his water. So I got Booker, that was a cook for Muhammad Ali. We put him in another hotel room. We didn't take the one that
Abu Bakr.
We stayed away from him. And we fed him. And then he had the fast.
Out of a suite, right?
Yeah, out of a suite. So he was lazy. So we was a little bit overweight, so we had to fast him. He didn't eat nothing. So he made the weight. He made the weight. I said, all right, Aaron, where are my tickets? You know, you ain't the co-promoter. I said, yeah, but I made the deal with you. He said, no, he put me on the sixth row. So I said, I didn't put my guy in the corner. No, no, no. He's not no corner man. I said, okay. Well, he's a cameraman. Put him on the apron. So he put him on the apron. First round, man, that damn Johnson can fight. Third round, that damn Johnson can fight. Fourth, fifth round, Johnson can fight. Seventh round, he cut Eddie. Eddie retreats because Eddie don't like blood. Eddie retreats. I said, oh, my God, we're going to lose this fight. So around the ninth round, I said, put the camera down. What? Put the camera down. Use your mouth. Use your mouth. When that bell said ding for the 10th round, he hollered, freedom roll! Freedom roll! Eddie started coming back. Boy, freedom roll! So he went to the corner after the 10th. I said, Kareem, don't stop. Don't stop. Keep talking to him. 11th round, freedom roll! And we knocked Johnson the hell out in the 11th round. He jumped up.
Yeah,
and it was
amazing in the dressing room. After the fight, Marlon Johnson, when he was laying on the workout bench, the massage table, and when Eddie came in his dressing room to see him, and Marlon asked Eddie, he said, I don't know what you had in your gloves. It felt like you was hitting me with bricks. Remember that?
he said
it felt like you were hitting me with bricks.
What made Eddie a dull fighter? He had radar. You could throw left hook, right hand, he's going to slip it off. But he ain't going to throw no punches. He's going to slip it. And then something says, all right, I'm tired of this. He hit you one punch, you out. Just one.
Yeah, great counter punches.
Yeah, but it wasn't enough to make him one of the best fighters in the world because all he would do was slip punches, and then bam, throw the right hand. He had a hell of a right hand. But when he jumped up in the air, that's where Sylvester Stallone should still be paying him because Eddie came down on his knees. And when he came down, he said, Allahu Akbar. And I said, whoa, I never taught him. Baha didn't teach him. So when he got in the dressing room, they said, we're going to change your name. And they gave him Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. That's how he got his name.
That's right. Well, look, you know, Manny Pacquiao, Mariah, we just can't do you in 45 seconds or anything like that. But, you know, because it extends it, man, we're talking over 50 years. You know, in time, and to try to speed that time up. we can't do it. But we would ask you and want you to come back on the show. Can you do that?
Well, you know, I like you. I always tell you I love you, and I like your style, but you're so cheap, I won't be back for a while. It's time, man.
The greatest of all times. That's his
of
life.
Of all time.
The greatest of all times. That was his lie. You know, he said, like he told me, he said he must be the greatest. It's because Allah called him home, and we're talking about him now. What a wonderful human being, you know, and what he gave to so many people. He poured in into. I'm a prime example of
Gene Kilroy. He loved Gene Kilroy. Gene Kilroy was the man. Remember, we thought all white folks was deaf, but Gene Kilroy.
Right.
I called him Soul Brother Number One. That man, whatever Ali needed on a high level, just like we got that mountain, that man wasn't going to give Muhammad Ali that mountain. Gene brought that mountain. And Gene brought the mountain on a Monday and turned the deed over to Ali on a Tuesday. That's how we got that mountain. Because Gene came from the Kennedys, man, and he was doing that movie that movie's been heard, and he left all of that to be with Muhammad Ali all the way to his grave. And that's how we were able to operate. So that's why when I say that, because I needed someone like a Gene Kilroy, but a little more powerful. And his name was Warren Flagg, who said, I locked down King twice. I called him the Joe Frazier because he lost the Don King. But when he lost to Don King twice on a hung jury, he took a lot out of him. Yes, Frazier couldn't beat Ali, but he took a lot out of Muhammad Ali. So I called him the Joe Frazier of the FBI.
Speaking about Don King and all him, you know, you and Don did a lot of great things together with Butch Lewis. I mean, to be you. Two as the biggest African-American boxing promoters or promoters in the world at the time that could bring together that kind of economic power and change the economic powers in cities and states by events that you put on. You know, y'all are definitely worthy to be praised, all three, Butch Lewis, Don, and yourself.
Was my motivation, my determination, because a man come out of prison and did what he had done for all the fighters, all of them. I don't care what they say. He made a lot of money for the athletes. And I used to say to Tyson, Tyson said to me, you pushing Don King? I said, Don was giving you $35 million, $33 million. You left Don King with the Shelly Finkel and you get $10 million. It's a flip. Shelly makes $33 million, and you only make $10. And he said something that it was, I don't know, but he said it. He said, you're right. He said, Don King was like my dad, but he robbed me. And so, therefore, I'd rather go to an enemy that will steal, and I know he's my enemy. So if I'm making $10, I will not go with him. For $33,000, I couldn't understand that, but I do appreciate that. And when I created this, there's a Storm 1 and 2, and I created 49.95, and I created a man that he beat, that King beat in the courtroom, which was Steve Wynn. Steve was my friend. Don said, "We're not going to be able to use Steve Wynn." I said, "Watch me." So all of that was my idea. Desert Storm 1, Desert Storm 2, 49.95. I convinced all the distributors to get out of that $22 and come to $24.95, and I gave Mike $11.5 million. He was only making $5 million. They was kicked off of HBO. And I said, Don, come with me. We can be power. Two African-Americans, the young, the old, the good-looking, the ugly. You know which one is the good-looking. But if we come together, Don, we'll be able to Texas. He grossed $117 million in Two Face, the highest ever gross in the history of pay-per-view. It was so nice, we did it twice. So I have to give credit, but I said, Don, you can't do this without Bush Lewis. He said, you want, but I said, yes, because we don't need nobody on our car will pull out. That's what I was fearful of. I feared that he would sabotage it. He said, you're right. So we went and got Butch, and Butch brought his fighter in, and he won the fight. And then I brought in Buddy McGirt for the rematch on number two, and I made Buddy a millionaire because Al Searle and I was close. I gave him $1 million to fight that boy for the title, and Buddy beat
Simon Brown.
So yeah, we was like the Three Musketeers. For some reason, we separated, and I went to Butch's funeral, and I didn't know how powerful this man was. He had all these judges and all these great actors, you name them, they all was with him. Whether you say Denzel Johnson, you can name them. And the man that had the money, or the owner of BET, loved Butch Lewis. That's why Butch Lewis made money. But a guy came over to me. His name was Red. He said, you know what Bush used to say? If you and he had got together, we would have controlled the whole boxing world and the whole entertainment. I said, Bush said that? He said, yes. And I had to tell you because you said, hey, man, I respect the way he went out. That was an unbelievable funeral. And the show what he did was in that type of, so you're 100% correct. Butch came after Don, not me. And the reason Butch came after Don, and when Don did the wrong thing to Herbert, he told Herbert, Muhammad, I'm sitting there because everybody thought I was Herbert's son. Don said, Ali, did you know I gave Herbert $250,000? And Herbert looked at me and I looked at him. And Don said, yes. He didn't tell you. He said, you mean you paid me $5 million. He gets 33 1/3. And you like a fool gave him another 250. Good for Herbert. You the stupid one. And he walked out. So Herbert said, okay, it's what I want you to do. There's a white man walking around in Don's office. I said, the one hangs his head down, put his arms behind his back. He said, yeah. I said, every time you look at me, he said, don't come in this field. He said, yes. He said, tell him I want him to call me. Meanwhile, here comes Butch Lewis. I learned it for the first time. Butch had a deal in Germany. And he told Don, let's do the deal. Don kept ignoring him, kept ignoring him, kept ignoring him. So when Don did that to him, Herbert told Bob Arum, that was his name. And he said, Bob Arum, create a company called Top Rank. That's who said, Bob said, no way he's going to be a boxer. So me, he was right telling me that. And Jim Brown, the great Jim Brown said, you'll be a damn fool if you don't come into this business. Go get your license. Don't worry about it. He did. He said, but I want Butch Lewis with you. That's so it was Herbert that made King. Herbert made Bob Arum. Herbert made Butch Lewis. And Herbert made me. That's Herbert Muhammad. And that's when we went to Germany, and that's when I sold about $350,000 worth of tickets. Ali never paid me. I was always an entrepreneur. That's how I learned Bob Arum. So Bob Arum stayed up under me because of Herbert. And I knew all Arum's moves, so I was watching him, and I was observing it. And so when I decided to go into the boxing at 21, Bob Arum offered me $500,000. I said, no, I don't want your money. I take your money, I owe you. I did it myself, so I didn't take it. So Arum and I was very close. King and I was very close. But the point was, they all was close to me because of Muhammad Ali. So that's how Don lost. Muhammad, and that's how Bob Arum became who he is today.
And the great attorney that was Elijah Muhammad's attorney, Charles Lomax, Sidney and
Charles Lomax.
The great attorney Charles Lomax, a mastermind.
I got this from Don. I got this from Don. Don King would do anything to make a deal. So when I'm making a deal, I would go to Charlie and go to his. Don't you know that people sleep? I say, oh, no, you work for the greatest of all time. Ain't no time for you to sleep. But we would sit there and do the contract, and he'll use the word like perpetuity. I said, can you take Don King's hat off and put on your human hat? What do this word mean in perpetuity? That means forever. Hell no, I ain't signed that forever. And I ain't do that. Oh, yeah.
we got 1 minute, man. Can we bring you back next week, same time, same place? Hey, Bob, what do you think about this show, man? I told you, Mirage.
I think you got to bring it back, Mirage. Yeah, come on back. Man, the series are great. It's only just begun.
Yeah, well, hey, look, thank you, Mirage.
Y'all be safe.
Next week, 11:15, we're going to bring you back at 11:30. We'll bring you back at 11:30. And thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, who takes us on that carpet ride all around the world, week in and week out. And prayers to Henry Haskop, our boxing historian. And we'd like to thank you, Murad Muhammad, the legendary boxing promoter of all time. The Hall of Fame is so great that
they announced me twice. Isn't that amazing? I mean,
we'll see you next week for the same rate.
We're going to see you next week
for the same rate. Salaam alaikum.
All right.
Peace and love.
All right.